You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Senses not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome back, everybody. Well, I almost made it through the entire hour with my recovery here, but I engaged in some cough suppressant technology during the break, and let's hope it holds. I mean, I actually don't feel that bad. I sound a lot worse than I feel. Anyway, I want to just very quickly cover a couple of things. If you care to research to or donate to our research efforts, you can do so. You can go to our webpage, and it says Donate. The Common Sense Show up in the upper right. Or you can simply send your kind donation to P.O. Box 32, Whitman, Arizona, 85361. And I want to just mention a good friend of mine. He was on the show last week. I'm mad that his segment go viral when we released it on YouTube. And that's Bob Griswold. He really owns what I think he should call it Prepper's Heaven. But he calls it Ready Made Resources. And you can go to his website at readymaderesources.com. He's got everything you'd want, everything from night vision to creating your own water system. But I'd encourage you to give Bob a call tomorrow after you look at his website. And you can get a hold of Bob Griswold at Ready Made Resources at 800-627-3809. And again, I'm really pushing the storable food because I'm telling you, folks, right now in Venezuela, I believe we are seeing the beta test for Executive Order 13603, the control of food, the introduction of slave labor. It's all there, and it parallels what's happening, what was in Executive Order 13603, put out by Obama in 2011. Don't get caught short. You know, you need your storable food, you need water, you need guns and ammo, you need alliances, you need a bug-out plan. Well, we can help you with the food. Go to numana.com/Hodges. Well, my, oh, my, oh, my. I lose sleep over this crap. Pat, I want to share something with you from an old, old dear friend named Vance Davis. He used to be in the NSA. And he told me, and he was so clear about this, that in his training in the early 1990s, he was told that what's going on the planet is a fight between good and evil. And he said that the evil wanted to capture the elements of the soul, kind of an anti-God rebellion, but they were unable to. Now, he told me this in 1993. But you keep in mind the year. The year is critically important. He said since they could not unravel the mystery of the soul, they were going to change human beings. This was a prediction for transhumanism, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And, you know, transhumanism was just a metaphysical proposition before science got involved. In other words, they sat around, they stared at their navels, basically, and hoped for immortality. People have been doing that for a very long time. When science really started to pick up, the transhumanists saw it as an opportunity to take matters into their own hands, if you will. And they begin to use science as a crutch at first, and now they're using it as an instrument to recreate humankind in their own image, like what they want it to be. Mm-hmm. And they're able now to rely upon genetic modification, for instance, other types of life extension technologies that they're talking about. You know, people like Ray Kurzweil are talking about the singularity is going to happen in 2045, maybe 2035. And all of the computers are just going to, like, you know, all of a sudden take over the world, be more more intelligent, more advanced than humans will. All this crazy stuff. Crazy talk, a lot of it. Whether or not they're just deceived remains to be seen. I think they are. But the transhuman movement has changed significantly in the last 30 years, and science is why. That they actually are going to achieve immortality, and they're going to recreate humans. They call it humans 2.0, if you will. Sounds like Microsoft involved. We better beware.
Yeah.
But you know, humanity 2.0 is on the way, they say. And instead of just relying on evolution, this time they say we will control evolution. And we will engineer humans.
It's pretty much what Vance told me 23 years ago. But I never even heard of transhumanism, and he didn't use the term. But I look back on the discussions we were having then, and to me, this is exactly what we're looking at. So we're not only talking with technocracy about the control of everything, and we live in squalor because we can't afford the utilities, we can't heat our homes in the winter and cool them in the summer, and live in really small space, horrible living conditions. But we're also talking about the fact that the people in charge don't like us very much in our present form, and they're going to force humanity to change if they have their way. Am I phrasing that correctly?
I think so. I think so. And, you know, the scientific mind that buys into this this transhumanism stuff, it's a strange mind to people who aren't part of it, because it doesn't seem like there's any logic to it, any rationale whatsoever. I can assure you, though, to them, they have a rationale behind what they do. But all of this stuff, whether it's technocracy or transhumanism, it's based on a philosophy called scientism. And my next book, I'm going to write a lot about scientism and how it is the new religion, if you will, the worship of science. And the father of technocracy, Henri de Saint-Simon, who was a philosopher in the early 1800s, he also wrote about scientism. He's one of the first people that really developed the concept. And he basically said that scientists are able to predict the future, that scientists are better than all other humans. And, you know, you can see this is a bad place to start. When you start with a concept that scientists are better than everybody else and have a right, kind of like a divine right, if you will, to guide and tell the rest of society what they should do. This is scientism. It's the worship of science. And scientism claims that there is no truth outside of scientific discovery. You got a Bible? Forget it. There's no truth there because it can't be scientifically determined. So if they can't figure it out in a laboratory or a test tube or whatever, even using pseudoscience, it doesn't exist. And they just will not acknowledge it as being anything that even exists. Scientism is an evil, evil philosophy. And it's infiltrated, well, not just infiltrated, but it's completely dominating the transhuman and the technocracy world. And people are beginning to worship science like a religion. That's why Al Gore can say things like, if you don't believe like me, you deserve to be punished. That's a religious proposition.
That's downright scary. That truly is. That's beyond all common sense and all logic.
Well, our common sense. Yeah, to them, they're perfectly justified in what they're doing because they are, after all, the scientists. And they have the God of science on their side. You see, it's like a priesthood, Dave. You know, you go back to the Incas in South America, right? They had maybe a good volcano out there or something, and the priest would run up the volcano and listen to the god of the volcano speak. And they'd come down and they'd tell the people what the volcano said. And the volcano needs to be appeased. And so we'll appease the volcano that says it wants to have, five young virgins next month to be sacrificed. And you got to do that or this volcano is going to rain down fire and brimstone on all your villages and wipe you all out. See, this is a religion. It's a priesthood. Science is the oracle. Science is the oracle to which the priest, and only the priest, the initiated, if you will, can go and listen carefully to see what science says this week. And then they come back to people like you and I and say, science has spoken, my friend. And we're going to tell you what science has not only said, but what science demands of you. See, this is a religion, Dave. This is exactly what's happened. The God of science is being set up as an oracle. The priesthood are these technocrats and some instances the transhumans who are self-qualified to be the priesthood, to tell us what science, and we're supposed to obey them. We're supposed to obey those priests. You know, Al Gore is one of them, for, you know, the, in my metaphor. We're supposed to obey them. Why? Because it's science, after all, and science is God. How dare you not obey the God of science? The science is settled. You must obey. Crazy, isn't it?
I'm almost, yeah, I'm speechless. Where does the Pope fit into technocracy?
Oh, my. I'll tell you what. The Pope is up to his eyeballs with sustainable development and the United Nations. He wrote an encyclical last year on climate change. He didn't write it personally. Some other guy wrote it, but it was bad. And that's why he went to New York City late last year to address the combined United Nations meeting that was there to discuss climate change. And his paper is being used as instrumental now in getting the largest part of the religious world on board with sustainable development, which is technocracy. And so the Pope's up to his eyeballs in it, lock, stock, and barrel. Some Catholics are very upset, by the way.
Well, they should be, because I don't want to make my Catholic friends mad, Pat, but the Pope is he's advocated for a number of things which I find highly objectionable as a Christian. And he has promoted the marriage of Christianity and Islam into what's called Chrislam. And now he's saying all religions are valid, equally valid. And he's endorsing all of the Agenda 21 principles, which are, in my opinion, satanically inspired. Are we moving towards, with technocracy, the one world religion will worship Lucifer? Is there any indication from what you found of that?
Oh, you know, I think there's a good undercurrent of that going on. You know, the Bible does refer to the God of this world as being Lucifer himself. And as such, the implication is that he orchestrates all the various activities and stuff that man gets into, of an evil sort especially. And I think you can see a good flavor of that in the Pope's activities and stuff, especially as it relates to topics like social justice, which the Catholic Church is into big time. The concept of social justice is on the lips of all the people at the United Nations. The concept of social justice, when it morphed with the Catholic Church into liberation theology in the 1970s, took out entire countries in Africa and Southern Africa especially, and in South America. Liberation theology, it was Marxism and social justice mixed with Catholic theology, and it destroyed nations just like crazy. This whole mantra of social justice, the Pope talks about it, everybody's talking about social justice. Even evangelical Christians are talking about social justice. What they don't realize, just understand, is that in the last century, probably close to 150 million people died because of social justice doctrines. The Bolshevik Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the Cambodian genocide, all the liberation theology stuff that happened, national socialism with Nazi Germany, that was done in the name of social justice. One group has something that group A has stuff, group B doesn't have stuff. Group B is chided until it goes and wants to take stuff by force from Group A. You deserve it, my friend. They've been ripping you off. They got too much, and you don't have anything. You deserve it. You can go ask them. They're probably not going to give it to you. You better be prepared to take it by force. This has resulted in the death of hundreds of millions of people on the planet. And even to this day, nobody gets it. They don't get it, that it's the doctrine of social justice that caused this bloodshed in the first place. And so now the Pope is up to his eyeballs with not only sustainable development and all the things, the green economy goes along with that, but social justice is his main, the main plank in his platform. Social justice, the redistribution of wealth. It's absolutely, it's crazy, but every time social justice has gotten a foothold in a society, that society ended up dying at the hands of its own government. Every time in the last century.
Do you know who's really done research on this? Is the University of Hawaii through their Democide Project.
Yes.
They make a strong and compelling case that governments, through the social justice doctrines, have killed more people than wars in the 20th century. Far more people.
Combined. That's right.
Yeah. Let's go back to what I brought up earlier. The intention is clear that these people who get into power will do away with people who they feel might be a strain on society, or they're not buying into and drinking the Kool-Aid. This is why I think we're going to have the Great Culling. And I go back to the 90-95% reduction that people talk about, like Ted Turner and friends.
Yep.
And I don't know. I think it's going to be biological myself. Let me tell you what a friend of mine did, and this is why I believe this. The year is 2012, and it's somebody who I know. I used to be a Maricopa County first responder. This is before FEMA came on the scene. And I was told, you'll get the drugs first if there's ever a chemical or biological attack. I found out later that was a meaningless promise, but I volunteered. And then FEMA came in, and we did some interaction with FEMA, and I got to be very good friends with a guy in the counter-bioterrorism unit. And we stayed in contact, and I had his daughters and my undergraduate psych classes, and got to know him really, really well. Well, he shows up one night at my basketball office the last year I was coaching, 2012. And he said, we're leaving right after Christmas. And he described for me subterranean housing that like-minded people from his contacts at DHS and FEMA had built together over a several series of years. And I said, so what are you running and hiding from? He goes, well, first of all, quote unquote, we know where all the bodies are buried. In other words, we know the scandals and what they're up to. And that makes us a target like the brown shirts. I said, I get that. But he said, more importantly, we need to have portable air. And I said, why portable air? And I kind of already anticipated. He said, we have biological and chemical weapons that can be race-specific, genetic-specific. We have things the rest of the world does not even know. And he said, if they can't get this country the way they want, and now I'm thinking about the Trump and the populist movement, that they are going to employ these means to dramatically reduce the population. And then let's go forward to the Deagle documents, and Deagle, D-E-A-G-E-L, is a CIA mouthpiece. They're a front group for the CIA, and I've documented that in an article I wrote yesterday. And Deagle calls for the United States military to be defunded by 92% by the year 2025, and our population will go from 316 million to about 65 million. How does that fit with what you anticipate with regard to the agenda?
Well, I don't think I'd probably go specifically that far to make that near-term prediction. We know the policy is there, that's for sure. We just don't know the specifics of it, at least in my mind. And we know that there's pressure on population growth, tremendous pressure. We know that our demographics needle is already pointed down. So if nothing of an extra nature happened, our population is going to shrink dramatically just because of that. Anything else that gets added on top of it, any kind of other pandemic, somebody lets something happen, whether on purpose or accidentally, out of a laboratory that shouldn't get out in population, it could have an incredible pandemic effect. It really could. But that's not saying that's the way it's going to happen, or it's going to happen on, you know, a certain day and time, whatever. It could, but even if it didn't, we're going to still end up in the same position in the end. Population's going down.
Are you familiar with Mike Kulig's America2050.org site?
No. I'll say no.
He was Obama's first mentor in Obama's, quote, community involvement days in Chicago. You know, in other words, he didn't have a real job and the substitute for a real job. And he now visits the White House. I have pictures of it, even though the White House denies it. And he has developed a series of plans to redistribute tax from suburbs to inner city, and he's promoting all kinds of Agenda 21 policies. But he has a site, and it's really fascinating. He talks about 11 mega regions of 6 million people each as the goal by 2050. And this is a guy who routinely comes and advises the president on Agenda 21 issues. So here's another guy basically quoting the same numbers as the Deagle publication, but just with a different time frame.
Yes, yes. I have seen that, by the way, that the 10 regions and the, you know, the population, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're not talking about how we're going to get there from here to there, but the implication is not good that they're even talking about it at all.
Well, clearly it's what they want.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Why else bring it up? Yep. Why would it become an issue? And, you know, you and I are targeted. I mean, our listening audience is targeted. I mean, we're not one of the 5% they hold dear. And yep. That's what people don't understand. They listen to this kind of discussion, Pat, and they go, oh, crazy conspiracy theory nonsense.
Yep.
And yet, this is all written out for us. That's what is amazing to me. I mean, even the Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has made depopulation comments from the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah. The reason that I started Technocracy.news last year was because I didn't want people just to listen to me, because I write something and, you know, you write an article. Yeah, a lot of people read it, and, you know, a lot of people also read it and they go, who's this Hodges guy? You know, come on, what does he know? But people need to hear this stuff from their own mouths, you know. They need to watch their lips move when they say stuff like this. And it's not us reporting on it and regurgitating it. It's like, listen to them. Listen to what they're saying themselves. And then come back and, you know, think about it, make a statement or something. But you don't have to take my word for it. Go just listen to what they're saying. And they're saying some crazy stuff. That's all I can say. They're saying crazy, crazy stuff to us, but they're serious about it. I made a statement on a few shows along the way that you remember the old movie where maybe an Alfred Hitchcock movie where there was an insane asylum and the inmates took over. They captured all the staff in the asylum, and they put on the white suits with the, you know, pocket protectors, and they look perfectly normal, but they're all schizophrenic nuts, you know, nutcakes. And they put all the staff of the, you know, into the padded cells and gave them drugs and stuff just like they were given drugs. And the inmates took over the asylum, but nobody knew it from the outside. People were coming in, bringing additional patients in and stuff. And they looked just perfectly normal. Of course, they knew the lingo because they'd been in the asylum for some time. And this is the feeling that I get sometimes watching these people, like the people we're talking about here. It's like the inmates, the insane ones, in other words, have taken over the asylum itself, but nobody's noticed a difference because they all still look the same. But they're crazier in a marsh hare.
Yeah. Well, when you were describing that story, I'm thinking, oh, that's what happened to Congress.
And that's what happened to Congress.
let's go to, and I don't know if this fits into the paradigm that you write about. I suspect it does. IntelliStreets.
IntelliStreets.
Are you familiar with that?
Explain a little bit.
It's the
smart streets.
Yeah, exactly. It's the network of grid, non-wiring light poles and electronically controlled signs that'll promote propaganda. They can, the later generations can even scan you for a gun. It knows your name. It does facial recognition. Mr. Jones, do not jaywalk.
Yes.
And you get these messages barked at you. Yeah. Well, it's been beta tested in Michigan, Birmingham, England. It's going in Vegas. They're putting it on college campuses. Mm-hmm. And I had a man send me pictures 2 days ago of intersections in Denver where they're putting these high-resolution spy devices, and they can listen to what you're saying in the car based on the voice inflections that come off the windshield. And they can target that. And they it's just the ultimate big brother. Is this part of the smart grid?
This is all part of the Internet of Things that I just got, that we discussed earlier, where individual inanimate things will talk to each other intelligently. And this is exactly what this is. This is part of that network, that grid of control that will change people's behavior, even just by the fact that it does exist. People will start to behave differently once they know it does exist. And they'll be conditioned to conform to the system in the way that they want them to conform. And, you know, the whole business of surveillance, it's not just about privacy. Surveillance is about monitoring the system so the engineers can better re-engineer and tweak the system. Remember we talked about technocracy being the science of social engineering?
Right.
Everybody knows engineers have to monitor what they build. How else will they know if it breaks? They have to have monitoring devices everywhere in place on the target society, so that they can process that data and figure out when stuff goes wrong, so that a minimum of stuff will go wrong. That's what all this monitoring is all about. It's not just about, well, we want to destroy your privacy. It does that. But the purpose of it is just a simple monitoring system. They have to monitor their manufacturing plant. So they put monitor. How much monitoring is enough? To an engineer, there's never enough monitoring. You could get down to you could get down to where you could literally monitor the molecules, and they would still be asking for more. They want everything, so there's no level that they can get. You know, they get down to it. It was discovered in San Francisco that the FBI was using recording devices in trash cans and stuff close to bus stations. You know, bus stops on the street, and they were eavesdropping on people's conversations. Why didn't that hit national news? Hit local news, actually. But, you know, this kind of monitoring stuff, it's everywhere. They're sucking up data on every conceivable part of society. And Congress has slapped them down. The judiciary has slapped them down. They flat out ignore them. They just ignore them and go on and do what they're going to do anyway. And I can't think how many times the NSA has been smacked in the last 10 years. They have been. Congress has just smacked them right upside the head. And they say, oh, gosh, we won't ever do that again. And then you come back 2 years later, and they're not only doing it, they're doing it by an order of magnitude greater than when they were slapped the first time.
I've been told by someone who I think was in a position to know that all the data collection is going into an aggregate, and they create a threat matrix scenario. It's kind of like the MMPI that psychologists use, where they measure your personality on 16 different dimensions and you get an overall score as well as subdomain scores. And this is the way it was described to me, and that they have charts that will show suitability. And by the way, they're population reduction oriented. In other words, they have the bell curve of reduction that they want. But if you have a talk show like this, you're on the undesirable side. If you're Ma Kettle, Pa Kettle, and you're not involved in anything, and you're not in bad health and using up resources, not talking bad about the government and all their database collections, then you might be one of the ones they let survive for a while. Pat, I've been told this by an insider, and it matches schematically with how I know that we can rate people's personalities across several dimensions. This is crazy. So you're right about the data gathering. There has to be a reason behind it. No one ever asked that. It's an invasion of privacy, people say. But we need to be asking, why are they gathering the data? How is this going to be used against us? Mm-hmm. That's the concern I have.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole idea behind the science of social engineering. It's a science, and you've got engineers and scientists running it, and they think they're going to run all of society by themselves. For, you know, they don't need politicians, they don't need policymakers. They're making the decisions on how to run society, and they need data. They're collecting the data. That's just in my mind, it's just that simple. They're collecting it because they need it to scientifically engineer society. Just like, can you imagine a 50,000 head of cattle feedlot operating with no computers today? It's impossible. Could not happen. You have to monitor those cattle, monitor their weight gain, monitor their health. You know, you track them all the way through the whole thing. You feed them a scientific formula. One group gets one formula, another group gets another formula. It's totally data driven. You have to have monitoring in place, and that's what these people are doing. They're creating this monitor, this giant monitoring system that will tell them everything they want to know about what's going on in the society.
It's just, you think they would just go out and play golf. It just, it's amazing to me that people would be preoccupied so much with control, which is why I get into, Pat, when I put the spiritual bent on this. I mean, we're looking at Satanism. And this is, to me, the only kind of explanation that could describe why people are so obsessed with controlling and perverting other people. I mean, wanting to change the form of a human being. Human beings survive because of the environment we live in. If you change our nature, what will you do to our survivability? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
It's absolute insanity. Let's define social justice. Can you give us an operational definition?
Oh, wow. Yes, I can. Let me pull up my article here on it. I just wrote an article a couple of weeks ago about social justice, and I called it, the title was, The Pseudo-Ethics of Social Justice in Economics, Politics, and Religion. And social justice has a very strange, kind of a strange history. It originated, the first use of the word, believe it or not, you flip on this, was a Jesuit priest that lived in the 1840s. His name was Luigi Taparelli. He was the first one to write about social justice, as a use that term. And it was about redistribution of wealth, and it was about the fact that working for the common good of man was man's highest calling.
There you go,
and
common good.
You can see where that's going. And then,
good, yep.
And then Karl Marx picked it up right after that. I don't know if they knew each other, but they might have heard of each other. Maybe Marx read something of Taparelli, I don't know. But Marx brought it up in the same way, redistribution of wealth, and, you know, he pushed that concept, the class, you know, the class have and have not mentality was part and parcel of his whole theory, political theory. That's what social justice was, basically taking from one group and giving to another. And it's not just limited to money. It could be, most of the time we hear about it in terms of money, but it could be other things like knowledge. It could be respect. You know, you hear people say, we don't get any respect. You get respect, we don't. We're going to tear you down so we look better. Yeah, social justice. You hear about with knowledge. Well, you know, matter of fact, when the devil tempted Eve in the garden, it was all about knowledge. He says, you know, God has some knowledge, and he didn't want to give it to you because he knew you'd be cool if you had all that knowledge. He said, you need to eat this fruit over here so you'll know everything that God knows, you know? Like, you're being cheated, and you need to go take it. And so she bought it, and it was about knowledge. It wasn't about money. But she felt she was deprived of knowledge that, you know, God was holding out on her. So, you know, we see social justice come out in different ways, but usually it's about money, redistribution of wealth. And it's, you know, this is what caused all the conflicts in the last century. But isn't it odd that a Jesuit priest was the one that really first started talking about it? And the Catholic Church today is so full of social justice, it's not even funny. In fact, the authoritative Jesuit organ today, the Ignatius Solidarity Network. I love it. The Ignatius Solidarity Network. And remember, the current Pope is a Jesuit also, Jesuit priest. It says, Pope Francis's emphasis on the plight of the poor and marginalized has brought new energy to the work of service and social justice in the Catholic Church. That's a direct quote. As you know, it's like, okay, that's what social justice is. Take from the one, give to another. Usually it's in terms of take from the rich and give to the poor. You know, the Robin Hood complex.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, all of the people that get behind us in religious terms, you know, well, we need to help our neighbor, so we have, they're talking about social justice in the church now. It's like, you know, there's a couple of commandments of the Ten Commandments. Maybe you don't like all ten, but there's a couple of them that are pretty good. One is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods or thy neighbor's wife. You know, so get your eyeballs off of everybody else's stuff. Another one is, thou shalt not steal. So, you know, quit getting this idea that you could just go take something from somebody that you didn't earn. You know, well, they don't think about that. Nobody asks that question, you know. When social justice creeps into the church, it's like, well, it gets a free pass or something because the Pope was talking about it. I'm sorry, I don't buy it, Dave. You could tell. I don't want to be facetious, but yeah, social justice is a real crock.
My wife and I met with the editorial board of the Arizona Republic, which is the state's largest daily, and I'm happy to say I'm an ex-subscriber. Mm-hmm. And the deal was about, Pat, as you know, our property rights battle, where they were trying to get us off our land without any compensation out here in my area in Yuma, where you and I both visited the Yuma farmers on this issue, and Tucson and Gila Bend. And I went through the constitutional legal issues. And actually, there was one reporter in there who really was buying what I was saying. She goes, you have excellent points. They need to set a fair price if they want you to move and buy you out. And I'll never forget the head of the West Valley editorial board, Vanita Hawthorne James. Yes, Vanita, I will never forget your name. I mean, she was Karl Marx, Angela Davis, reincarnated into one body. And what she said to me was, she goes, you have done an excellent and a very articulate job of laying out the constitutional issues. You've even talked about philosophical issues of fair play. But she said, for the greater good, you should move. And I said, without compensation? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, you are a subscriber to communitarian law, which runs rampant in Europe. And yes, as you know, Pat, communitarian law says you have the same rights as Americans do, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, blah, 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 until it's not in the common good. And who makes that decision? Well, the people in charge. That's the system we're moving to here, isn't it?
It is. Oh, yeah, it is. Absolutely. Yep. Communitarianism is just, it's everywhere in our society. Communitarianism is run as a philosophy. It's run by the class of people in our country known as community organizers. Those are the people that organize communities. They are communitarians. They express a communitarian philosophy. It includes social justice and everything surrounding what we're talking about, social justice. And they do nothing but agitate people to take from one group and give to another group. It's all about agitation. It's just, it's stealing. It's theft. There's no other way, there's no other word you can call it. That this lady would say that to you is not surprising. She believes that. She believes it. She's communitarian to the core. Somebody, maybe she was one of those community organizers. Who knows? Barack Obama was one, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for the life of me, the one reporter who was buying what we were selling, I can't remember her name, but she actually left the Republic within 6 months and was writing for the New Times, which is an ultra-independent community newspaper. And I found, I wasn't surprised by that, because she wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid. And boy, I'll tell you, Pat, too, the Arizona Republic, to them, there was no such thing as Fifth Amendment property rights.
Yes.
We had David Madrid out here in our neighborhood. And he said, I'm really surprised that this neighborhood is as civilized and sophisticated as it is. I mean, what do you think he's going to find? You know, Mom Pa Kettle wearing overalls with pitchforks and straw hats. I mean, it was crazy how he treated us. And then he went back and basically defamed me and basically said I was an ultra-conservative constitutionalist as an insult. He called me a constitutionalist and was insulting me. And we're seeing this now with Donald Trump supporters. Well, he's not a constitutionalist. They're calling us a nationalist.
That's right.
Well, let's take that concept here, because they want to take this smart grid that controls everything, and I mean everything, and there's plans to take it international. In fact, I believe that's already starting. Pat, can you tell us about that?
Well, it has. It's been underway for years. This is not just an American phenomenon at all. Smart grid is being executed on a global basis as we speak, and they figured out the technology now to transfer large blocks of power between continents. It's an amazing technology. I don't understand it fully, but they can do it now. So they could have solar farms in the Sahara Desert and pipe massive amounts of Europe with a certain kind of transmission line they have now to Europe. And so they're planning on an international standard that will roll up, if you will, that will roll up all of the power in the world into a single point of control in the planet. They're doing that here in our country with the Department of Energy, because those standards are already, they're already in place, and the utility companies are using those standards. But we have to remember that smart grid was part of the original technocracy specification in 1934 when they wrote this whole thing up. It's right out of their playbook. And let me read you the first two requirements that they wrote up for smart grid back in 1934. This is the first one. It's a direct quote. Register on a continuous 24-hour-per-day basis the total net conversion of energy. That's number one. Number two, second requirement, quote, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load, close quote. Smart grid, right? That's it. Make possible a balanced load. This is not a new tech. This is not a new ideology. This is not a new policy. It was written into the core of technocracy in 1934, for Pete's sake. Word for word, I could have written this last year for APS, and it would have been valid. They say exactly the same thing. Register on a continuous 24-hour-per-day basis the total net conversion. That means the use of energy, like smart meters. And then by means of the registration of energy converted to consumed, make possible a balanced load. And isn't the phrase balanced load all that you hear from the utilities everywhere in the country, everywhere in the world? They're talking about a balanced load? What does that mean, balanced load? You know, nobody can really get their hands on that bar of soap. But apparently, it means they're going to balance it on your back, not their back. They're going to balance it all right, but they're going to balance it with you by balancing you. That's what technocracy originally planned anyway.
But
we're going to balance.
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, in other words, you're going to consume less, like what we tell you to consume, but you're going to consume less. And you see, everything in the world runs on energy. If you don't have energy, there's no economic activity. Literally. What can be done if there's no energy? Industry stops. So to the extent that we have energy, a great source, abundance of energy, industry and stuff will just do great. But to the extent that you have somebody put the clamp on energy, you see, they can control every bit of industrial and service production. They can control the flow of goods altogether from when they're manufactured to when they're consumed with complete specificity. This is the science of social engineering. And that's why smart grid is key to the implementation of technocracy. It is not an ancillary issue. It's core to providing technocracy on a global basis. And that's why they're implementing smart grid all over the planet, all over Europe, all over Africa, all over China, India, everywhere you go, Australia, New Zealand. They're all implementing their own version of smart grid. And the IEEE, which is the big electrical engineer society throughout the world, the IEEE itself has pledged their 375,000 electrical engineers to work on creating the global standard for data, for communicating data on energy. so if they can have a global standard for energy, you know, rolling up all the data and control and stuff all over the planet. I think, well, 375,000 engineers ought to be enough, I guess, get that done.
Yeah, but you know what? They can go through that, and that's all well and good, but the way that Arizona has its utilities is pretty similar to across the country. And APS, Arizona Public Service, they buy the corporation commission that's supposed to regulate their rates. They donate to these corporation commission elections through dark money. They don't have to account for how much they spend or who they spend it on. And as long as we have these practices across the country, we're not going to be able to stop this.
No. Somebody needs to figure out a monkey wrench to take this smart grid away from the utility companies. But they've been very clever on how they've gotten it. It came in a very clandestine way in 2009 in our country and most other countries that implemented as well. It got implemented by spending stimulus money after the last financial crisis. There was never any congressional approval or oversight on this at all. But Obama spent the stimulus money. That was the money that Hammer and Hank Paulson got when he went to Congress and slammed his fist down and said, if you don't give us a blank check, the world's going to, you know, where tomorrow. And they gave him a blank check. And some of that money came out, several hundred million dollars came out to kickstart smart grid in our country. It came down through the Department of Energy, went out to certain utilities around the country, and it took off. And it continued to get federal money after that to keep it going. But that's how it got started. It had no congressional oversight whatsoever. And I will suggest, if there's anything in the world that could possibly stop this technocracy from being implemented, it's going to be to scuttle the smart grid.
You mean
that's
where
this? That, well, I did that. Now, Dave, you're...
Okay, I'm sorry. I asked an embarrassing question. I'm usually pretty good at avoiding that.
I know. You'll wonder why your phone line is, like, going crazy next hour. But they'll be modulating your Internet. But, yeah, whatever it's going to be, however it's done, whether on a local basis or on a state basis or whatever... You know, if in Arizona we could get a hold of, say, a dozen state senators that really understand what you and I are talking about, that would probably be a big enough block of people to get serious attention and make serious trouble legislatively for these people that are doing this in Arizona, just in Arizona. And it could be outlawed easily. It could be outlawed. Even not on sickness basis, not on radiation poisoning or anything, but how about just outlawing it on the basis of its unconstitutional snatching of data from citizens without payment for that data? They have no right to take that data from your house and sell it to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along in the corporate world that wants to know what you're spending your energy on. This is a violation of our Constitution, gross violation in my estimation. And you know, they're taking your data without your approval. They didn't ask you to put those meters on your house. They just came out and did it. That's absolutely not right. If this was put up on a constitutional basis, these people could be stopped cold in their tracks. Boy, would they be shocked if somebody came after them like that.
I'm not holding my breath because...
No, I'm not either, but I'm just saying. In my mind, that would be the ultimate way to do it rather than having to, you know, resort to breaking the law.
Well, like I said, I'm not holding my breath. And what is most disturbing about this interview, Pat, is the fact that this is going to be global. You know, when there was the Renaissance and the Inquisition and people could run to the New World to tyranny, there's nowhere to run today.
Nowhere. New Zealand used to look good, but it doesn't anymore. Australia used to look good, but they're worse off than we are now. Europe? Oh, my gosh. What a joke. Europe is going to just be gone in another 10 years the way they're headed right now. So, where are you going to go? Greenland? Iceland? Ireland? I don't know. I mean, there's no place. Canada? No. Canada's got, oh, my gosh. They got all kinds of problems in Canada. Maybe we should all go to Mexico. I don't know. You don't want to go there either. It's full of crime, corruption, and drugs.
No, I bet. Well, what's the difference?
I know, it's just, oh, that's what we got up here. Here.
But that they have something in Mexico we don't have here. Immigration laws they enforce.
I know, no kidding. I dare you. I know you're not going to do this, but I would dare anybody to go down to the border in Arizona and try and sneak across the border into Mexico. I would double dog dare you to do it, because you won't get 50 yards before you get your rear end tossed in a jail, and you're probably going to sit there for 6 months while they figure out what to do with you and how to ransom you back. They absolutely will not tolerate it.
No, in fact, on their southern border, the biggest adventure for someone coming from Central America is to get through Mexico. Yeah. That's the biggest problem. I mean, I've had these people tell me this. The hardest part of the trip for them was getting past the Mexican authorities. They said, America, piece of cake. Mexicans, man, they really do enforce their immigration laws. That's why I love the Mexican leaders when they talk about Trump and flip him the middle finger for saying he wants to build a wall. Yeah. To make sure we get this in, because I know we have a lot of new listeners, and I think that what I'd like to do here is give them a way to follow your good work, talk about Technocracy Rising, tell people how they can follow you and get a copy of your book.
Well, my book's available on my website, technocracy.news. It's also on Amazon. There's a Kindle version on Amazon if you like to read electronically. But if you buy the book off of my website, which is technocracy.news, I always make a practice of sending out an autographed copy to people. I really appreciate the fact that they buy it and read it. So, I'd like to make it personal. But follow along with the story on technocracy.news. These are articles from around the world that you just hear what they're saying with their own lips. There's also a bunch of videos available on the media link at the top of the page there. Videos that were made by great, people that really knew what they were actually doing with the camera. I've got some really good interviews and stuff there that would give you a snapshot of Technocracy. In my opinion, this is the clear and present danger to the world today. This is the end game that the Trilateral Commission talked about in 1973. And it's global now. It's not just in our country. It's global. And this is the problem. It's going to almost require a global solution probably in the end. But, we live in America. We still have a lot of fierce independence here, Dave, and people need to exercise that. They need to start driving this garbage out of their own local communities. Get out there and mix it up with your city council, your zoning boards, with your school boards, with your water boards. Get out there and mix it up and tell them, you can't pull this garbage here. This is America. Just forget it. It doesn't fit. And name them and shame them. That's what they've done to us for all these years. And we shut up. We need to go out and just, take the gloves off and give them back some of their own medicine. And say, you know what? We're not the screwy ones here. You are. You need to quit and just get out. We don't want you here. That's my opinion.
Well, I know, but they control the media, or 98% of it, and they promote the pseudoscience. I hear what you're saying, but I agree. It needs to become a grassroots issue, and I think to a large extent, Trump plus our efforts, Pat, collectively have added up to a great awakening in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
let me tell you, it was something I'm going to develop in the third hour, and Katie and I are going to talk about this in the last half hour of the show, among other things. But Fort Carson in Colorado Springs, for example, and I have the document, and they are initiating a martial law riot control drill using foreign troops and combat troops. Combat troops for riot control. Yep. And in Texas, in UX-16, Pat, they're preparing for guerrilla warfare in which American military units have gone rogue, and the war is guerrilla. And I have the biz op job ads for the crisis actors. There's no question what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They know the uprising is coming.
Yeah,
we're headed for a collision course, in my humble opinion. I don't, Pat, I at one time when we first talked, years and years and years ago, I thought Technocracy would be like the invasion of the body snatchers. subtle and not come to people in terms of what they could understand, and you'd wake up the next morning and the system would be in place over a gradual period of time. Now, Pat, I'm of the opinion that we're going to have a war before we get technocracy in its full form. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not advocating for it. Yeah. I just see that if Trump were to die tomorrow, assassination or natural causes, his movement's not going to stop.
No, absolutely not. And even if, no matter who gets elected, remember, half the country is going to be livid. And it's not going to heal America in the sense of the society being healed. If Hillary gets in, you know the rest of the conservative movement is going to be absolutely furious with that part of the country that elected her, and vice versa. If Trump gets in, there's going to be people that hate his guts so much today that they're going to be willing literally to tear our country. You look at Black Lives Matter today. They're on a tear today. When a Democrat's in charge, imagine what they would do if Donald Trump actually sits as president and starts doing anything he says he's going to do. Black Lives Matter, with all the money coming from George Soros and people like that, they are going to go nuts. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
They're not going to just say, oh, you were right, you know, hey, you know, turnabout's fair play, you know, we'll go home, you run the country for the next 8 years. They're not going to do that.
I agree. Even when Trump gets in, I agree. Even if Trump is elected and assumes office in January, they're not going to sit back and give up the trillions of dollars that they're stealing from us. They're going to fight.
That's right.
And I think that's where we're at right now, Pat. I think they're going to fight. Well, Pat, your website again is technocracy.news. Mm-hmm. And your book, Technocracy Rising, you can get a free autographed copy at the website. And it's also available in Kindle. And, Pat, you've been a terrific guest. And as things continue to develop, I want to have you back on. In fact, actually, I'm doing a series of mini podcast interviews. And I want to get you started on those, too, and update us as things develop. And sometimes we'll play it here, and sometimes we'll just release it through our website. But you've been a terrific guest and always are. And we always look forward to when you come on. So thanks for joining us.
You're entirely welcome, Dave. Anytime, you got my phone number, you know where I am.
Exactly.
Be glad to help.
The same city. Take care, Pat.
Thank you.
Well, Katie, wow, what a terrific guest. It's always a highlight when I get to interview people like Pat Wood. But, Katie, give people a real quick 10-second highlight of what you're covering.
Well, we're going to cover couple of things, a couple of people, my testimony and a couple other people, but I want to educate the audience on questioning your doctor, the medical industry in general, and listening to the story about a diagnosis.
Got it. Oh, I can't wait to hear that. Okay, we're out of here. End of hour number two. Thanks to Pat Wood for 2 great hours. We'll be back in hour number 3 with our lovingly called health check.